Sudanandana Prajajana Ranjana.
The best.
I don't know. Yasodhanandana Prajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhardhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Astotra Tatatsa Sinada Divine Graces Confound Acharya Srila Abhacharana Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Maharaj Ki. Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Astotra Tatatsa Sinada Divine Graces Srila Bhakti Vedanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Prabhupada Maharaj Ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnavina Ki. Namacharya Silharidasa Kurke Pram Si Kahav Si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Gadarara Siva Sayada Sigura Bhakta Vinake Si Si Radha Krishna Gopal Gopinath Samakunda Radha Kunda Grigavadam Ke Savandavandam Ke Samatura Dam Ke Maya Panavadvip Dam Ke Si Jaganapura Dam Ke Gangamai Jamunamai Ke Samaditulsa Devi Bhakta Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vindi Ki Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the Sama Devotees. All glories to the Sama Devotees. All glories to the Sama Devotees. All glories to Sigur and Gauranga.
What's the format again?
It's just one verse and just the usual class.
Okay.
We have to leave 30.
Okay.
And we'd like to welcome His Holiness, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj.
So, this is more of an academic forum. So that's why I didn't want to protract with anything in terms of songs and all the stuff. Because even a word is enough for the wise. It's not a question of giving a sermon for 2 hours and people are tired. But it's a matter of really connecting with people's heart. Because what is important for us is to become inspired, to become motivated, to be able to prosecute the cause of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we might be brief in our programs, but the important thing is the quality of the association, the quality of our hearing, the quality of our sharing, the quality of our caring. And so, today's verse is taken from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Text 41. And I'd like to indulge to play with you, and that you permit me to do this. I have one of my senior friends here. Everybody's my friend. I have a very special friend here, so I like his voice. So I will want him to read the verse in Sanskrit, and
we can go on with that.
Yeah, Sanskrit text. Okay.
Taitanina seveta. Bhūṣu-puruṣa-kvacit. Rajaloka Patir Guru. Taitanina Seveta. Bhūṣu-puruṣa-kvacit. Sheshato Dharma Silo Raja Loka Patir Guru.
So I just take the word for word translation.
Atha,
therefore,
Ethani,
all these,
na,
never,
Sebeta,
come in contact.
Bhūṣu,
those who desire well-being.
Purusaha,
person.
Kvacit,
in any circumstances.
Visesataha,
specifically.
Dharmashilaha,
those who are on the progressive path of liberation.
Raja,
the king.
Lokapati,
public leader.
Guru,
the brahmanas and the sannyasis. Translation. Therefore, whoever desires progressive well-being, especially kings, religionists, public leaders, brahmanas and sannyasis, should never come in contact with the four above mentioned irreligious principles. Please kindly respond and repeat. Therefore, whoever desires progressive well-being, especially kings,
religionists,
public leaders, brahmanas and sannyasis, should never come in contact with the four above mentioned irreligious principles. So let us listen to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Purport by His Divine Grace, His Confounder Acharya, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Brahmanas are the religious preceptors for all castes, and the sannyasis are the spiritual masters for all the castes and orders of society. So also are the kings and the public leaders who are responsible for the material welfare of all people. The progressive religionist The progressive religionists and those who are responsible are human beings, or those who do not want to spoil their valuable human lives, should refrain from all the principles of irreligiosity, especially illicit connection with women. If a Brahmana is not truthful, all his claims as a Brahmana at once become null and void. If a sannyasi is illicitly connected with women, all his claims as a sannyasi at once become false. Similarly, if the king and the public leader are unnecessarily proud or habituated to drinking and smoking, certainly they become disqualified to discharge public welfare activities. Truthfulness is a basic principle for all religions. The four leaders of the human society, namely the sannyasis, the brahmana, the king, and the public leader, must be tested crucially by their character and qualification. Before one can be accepted as a spiritual or material master of society, he must be tested by the above mentioned criteria of character. Such public leaders may be less qualified in academic qualifications, but it is necessary primarily that they be free from the contamination of the four disqualifications, namely gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter. Om Gyana Timirandasya, Gyana Janan Salankaya, Saksur Mintam, Jaina Tasmai, Si Guru Venamaha. Sajetanya Manobistam, Stafitam Jaina Bhutale, Swayam Rupam Kadamayam, Dadati Swa Padantikam, Vancha Kalpatari Bhacha, Kripa Sundu Bhya Eva Chapatitanam, Pahani, Vashnayu. Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistai Bhutale, Samati Bhakti Vidanta, Swami Tanam. Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gauravani Pichari Nirvishesa Sonya Vrati Pachatati Sutta. So this verse is particularly very, the verse and its purport particularly very relevant to modern day societal development in terms of leadership. So we understand from Prabhupada's purport that a leader does not necessarily mean the president of the country. President of the country is just but one of the categories, or the governor of the state. And these are public leaders, and they are just one category. So the brahmanas are also leaders of society. And of course, the sannyasis are also leaders of society. Indeed, the Bhagavatam, Rishabhadev, he explains that even parents, they are leaders of society. Therefore, even potential parents are leaders of society. They are potential leaders of society. And sometimes things go wrong in our communities or in our countries, and the tendency is to point accusing finger to the figurehead whom people had appointed to be the president or voted to be put in a particular position. But we are all responsible. Why? Because the collective consciousness of the citizens, or the collective consciousness of the citizenry, invokes a particular quality of leadership. Therefore, if the citizens have, all of the citizens, their private lives are bad, and then they are expecting some, qualitative leader to come and lead them. I mean, it's like a wishful thinking. Because, for instance, we don't have, say in the community of elephants, a lion is considered to be the most powerful animal in the forest. But we don't find a lion being the leader of the elephants. Correct? Nor would we expect a cow to be the leader of dogs. A cow will be a leader of the cows. A dog will always be the leader of the dogs. And so, when we have in human society where a people are extremely unethical, and then they are expecting a very ethical leader to lead society, that is very, it's ridiculous. It's not a proper mindset. Because what is, again, you give another example. It is mentioned in the Sasa, the collective consciousness of the man or the husband and the wife at the time of mating will invoke a particular soul into the womb of the woman. And so, if the husband is drunk and the woman may be very spiritual, or if the woman is not spiritual, and or if the man is very spiritual and the woman is not at all practicing any spiritual culture, then if they are invoking a child, the consciousness of the man, although may be very high, is not going to do the job alone. It's both parties. Again, you find that the particular soul or child that will be invoked into that family is depending on the consciousness of both the husband and wife. Similarly, consciousness of the leader of society is actually invoked by the collective consciousness of the citizenry. Therefore, if we want our societies to be run by very proficient, effective leadership, then we have to be very much ethical. And so here in the purport delineates basic activities that should be avoided by any sane person, any person who is just not crazy. And he mentions about gambling, illicit connection with the opposite sex. And sometimes we think that, and I've had this even in a movement, people go sit on the asan, especially the men, and then they castigate women like anything. They think that, the presence of the women is just, it's just a distraction and all these things. And I remember when I was a brahmachari in New Jersey, it was the vice president. He had his wife lives with him in the temple, the elderly person. But sometimes he sits on the asan and he just talks against women like anything. And sometimes I couldn't really tolerate, so I will, gently oppose him. And sometimes he gets surprised, because then I give him a point of my own experience where I have seen women who go out to preach and the men lure them into illicit sex. I have seen all these Jehovah's Witnesses, because they go into the streets to preach. Okay. But then the lusty men, they see them and then they pretend as if, they are interested in what they are saying. They say, I'm interested in what you're saying. But I don't have the money now. I'm just coming from the office. This is my address. Meet me at this time. At my house, I really want to hear your preaching. And then a poor lady who is just anxious to convert people, and then she goes to the man's house in a bid to sell, distribute some of their tracts to them and then to convince them. And the man ends up luring her into sex. So I used to point out all these points, these things. I said, these are my own practical experience. I have seen it. So if you say the women are just a distraction, I've seen men who are busy distraction to preaching, who simply lure female preachers into sex. So the point is, illicit connection does not simply mean, men have an illicit connection with women, but women also have an illicit connection with men. Because the temptation is there on both sides. The loss is there. It's a matter of igniting it. And therefore, when we talk about even meat eating or non-violence, and sometimes people think that, for instance, the four regulatory principles of freedom, Prabhupada is mentioning about them here in the purport as a basic qualification for, any human being. In fact, for those who aspire to be leaders. So, If someone is not even eating meat, okay, and he goes about hurting other people's emotions and feelings, he's breaking the principles. Each time you hurt someone, you have broken this principle of nonviolence. Because even academically speaking, according to the American Psychological Association, this is the definition of violence. Each time you hurt someone or a group of people, you have committed violence. And when we say no meat eating, we're not just talking about gratifying the tongue with meat, but we're avoiding hurting the animals because they also have consciousness. They also have thinking, feeling, and willing. It's just that it's on a lower gradation. So the point is, I mean, if we have to simply, you know, separate some class of people or some class of living embodied souls and say, well, because these are human beings and these other ones are animals, because the animals, they have low consciousness, and so we could kill them and eat, it doesn't make any sense. And so people are crying about wars, but they don't know the requital or the fundamental principle underlining wars on the planet. Because people are slaughtering billions and billions of cows every day on this planet. So we have been violent and we are praying to God for peace. It doesn't work like that. It's very ironical. So if we want peace, we want to live a life that is devoid of violence, we should avoid violence. And the non-violence is not just the devotees in our communities. Everyone out there is fundamentally a devotee of Lord Krishna. Some people are covered. But if we hurt anyone, we are actually breaking one of our regulatory principles. Oh yeah? And it's very rampant these days, even in our community, you know, people are married, they hurt their spouse. They emotionally abuse their spouse. Or they emotionally even abuse others. I remember some time back, a girl went to report to her parents that, you know, this Prabhu is harassing me. It's sexual, he's harassing me for sex. And then the parents said, the father or the mother said, oh, don't say like that. He's a Brahman. What is this nonsense? A Brahmana is supposed to lead by example. A Brahmana, Lord Krishna defines the qualities, gives the qualities of a Brahmana in the Bhagavad Gita. So, if a Brahmana is supposed to be a leader of society, Prabhupada mentions here, then a leader, what did Krishna say? He said, a leader has to live by example. He says the ball rolling. It's not a matter of, you know, do what I say. No, it's a matter of, you don't need to preach to, a leader doesn't need to preach to anybody. People just follow your footsteps. And therefore, if a parent is smoking, for instance, and is telling the child, you know, boy, it's very dangerous to smoke. It could bring cancer and all this type of thing. What will the child do? If he is respectful, he will just keep quiet. But within himself, he will be thinking, look at this guy. He's smoking and he's telling me smoking is bad. And in fact, if you're smoking, you can't even tell your parents not to smoke. I mean, you can't tell your child not to smoke. You will not have the zeal. You will not have that type of courage. Because right within you, you will know, come on, this is the highest pretension. Therefore, it is important for us to understand the principles of the Srimad Bhagavatam. How Kali was allowed to stay in a places where there is gold. But gold itself is not bad. But that is where Kali, that is Kali's residence. And therefore, if we are dealing with wealth, we have to be very cautious. Because wealth itself is like a power. You know, when someone is put in a position, according to some research, once you're given power,
your body chemistry changes.
Oh yeah, it's not a theological concept. It's not a belief system. This is some proven facts from research. Someone is given power. He may be a very good guy, may be a very good girl, but he or she has been endowed with some political power. The body chemistry changes because now he can do things ordinarily that he or she wouldn't be able to do, and so he could help people, he could motivate people, or he could do the opposite. He could demotivate people by his actions. And therefore, the Vedic literature, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, is so replete with information on how to transform ourselves and how to transform society. If we simply take the instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we could really become not only very creative, but we could become caring, thinking leaders. And every one of us is a potential leader. How many people here are not potential parents? And Rishabha Dev says, if you are not prepared to save your dependents from the onslaught of samsara, don't be a parent. Don't be a mother. Don't be a father. Don't be a devata. Don't be a demigod. Don't be a worshipful demigod. Don't be a guru. So, the concept of leadership is a broad-based concept. And how many people out there even know that, they are responsible for their children, not only sociologically, but they are responsible for their children. They are also spiritually responsible for their children. They are supposed to deliver their children from birth and death. So how many people there know that? That is a snag. That is a problem. So we have been blessed with this spiritual legacy passed on to us right from Lord Krishna to Brahma, down to the six Goswamis, and on to Prabhupada. And now we are receiving it. Isn't that a very wonderful progress that the Jiva has made? When people out there, they don't have any information about this sacred text, which is given a basic idea on how to transform society. But the transformation we want in society must begin with ourselves. And Lord Chaitanya says, Kiba Vipra Kripa Niyasi, Sudha Kenanaya. I'm not a Vipra. And even if someone is not a Vipra, whether it's not a sannyasi, a Brahmana, whatever, he could actually tail along this path and attain perfection. So the question of simply resting our oars or hoping against the hope does not even arise. If someone is able to align with the instructions of the Bhagavatam, rest assured your life is a success. Whether you are a man, you are a woman, Krishna said, whether you are a child, you will be able to attain the supreme destination, despite all of the obstacles that are causing us, are giving us so much of incoherences. It's a matter of sticking to the goal. Because if we don't know the goal, then there is a problem. And if we do know the goal, we have to also have our mission, individual mission. Of course, our organization also perhaps set down a mission statement for his organization. So, again, the devotees have to be able to understand. We have to also have our own individual mission statement. And then we have to have our vision. And, of course, without our vision, we can't really prosecute our goals. So, it's an individual approach and a collective venture. How is it collective? Because every morning or every day we come together to have the worship or chant together, and that creates that type of synergy that is required to build us spiritually within the limited time. But if we have to do it individually on our own, then we could run into so much of difficulty. Because, for instance, if you're sitting down on your own in the forest chanting, you could fall asleep. Nobody's there to, you know, to tap you that. Hey, Prabhu. Oh, yeah. That is why we need the support of each other. Spiritual life means supporting each other. Lord Chaitanya inaugurated the Sankirtan movement. But essentially, what is this Sankirtan movement about? Support for each other. To be able to spread the message of Godhead. These principles, they look simple. But if we don't have the support of each other, we will not be able to make it. If we don't support even just these basic principles that Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, that will qualify anyone to be a leader. If people don't have the spiritual support of each other, it could be so difficult. And therefore, we have to properly budget our energies and our time to achieve our goal, which is Krishna Prema. It might be challenges. There might be challenges along the path. But again, if we depend on the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and many people have depended on his mercy, they attain perfection. Even in our movement, there are so many people who have gone back to Godhead. People that may even be considered or not very serious devotees. Not. And you see, it's not that you have to become a sannyasi. No. The five Pandavas, we are not sannyasis. We are the sannyasis. The five Pandavas. Krishna slept in their home. Krishna was their, I mean, like their messenger. Oh yeah? It's a matter of the devotion and the support we're having for each other. And essentially, you know, one of the things that I like you're setting here, the Krishna house, is that, you know, all of you are coming from, you know, skillful backgrounds, from academic backgrounds. For some of you who will even vow to use your life as preachers, you are the people who will sustain the preaching of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Because this is exactly how the Catholics spread, through education. If you don't have education, it is very difficult for you to preach to high profile people. And we need high profile people to recognize the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Yes, we can also, you know, give food to poor people and dogs on the street. But they will not be able to come to defend our philosophy in case some demonic people want to prosecute us, that, you know, give us, tag us and whatever. But again, we have to have that strong nucleus. That is why Prabhupada is saying that these four basic principles are prerequisites for us to be able to build a strong base, a strong foundation. This building you are seeing has a very strong foundation. Therefore, even a terrible wind comes, it doesn't blow it off. But we may have even very good intentions, very good ideas. If we do not seek for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we will not be able to follow even these four basic principles. And I tell you, if we are not able to follow these four norms that will qualify us as leaders, then we may even preach, people will not take it seriously. The words will not have any potency. Because it's like someone who writes a book on vegetarianism, a scholar who writes a book on vegetarianism, but his intention is to make money. Second is to make a name that is an author. Okay? And he sends the book into the market. And the books, I mean, no good sales. Because he has proposed something that he himself does not follow. His energy is not really there. It's just some, you know, a shadow of his energy is what he's trying to sell. Now these books are powerful. Why? Because they are the living example of, the writer himself is a living example of the constructs and the concepts in these books. So it's not that a Prabhupada is saying one thing and he does something else. No. He's saying one thing and that's what he's been following and that's what he wants us to follow. So if we want to affect people's heart, we should strive to become purified. And the purity comes with sadhana. The purity comes with sadhu sangha, association with other people, other devotees. And therefore we have to understand that when we are associating, we should know that everyone is a servant of Krishna. Everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. And when we understand that in principle, we should also have that type of mindset reflected in our relationships with each other. If we don't really demonstrate that, yes, you are part and parcel of Krishna, then again it becomes something very difficult to deal with. We will not be able to make progress in the way we desire. So these are subtle, you know, obstacles that could stagnate our process of devotion. You know, the concept of love is very universal, but the whole culture of Krishna consciousness is all about love, love of Godhead. But how can you even love God? How can you love God without loving His part and parcels? It's not possible. And so, our love of Krishna is directly proportional to our love, to the loving relationships we have amongst ourselves. If we don't really have genuine, deep loving relationship amongst ourselves, then, you know, people will not be able to stick to their ashram for a long time. I was speaking with one brahmachari, one devotee. He just left the brahmachari ashram. And he said the reason why he left the brahmachari ashram is that he has no deep connection with other brahmacharis. The relationship is just, he said it was too much on the surface. And we want deep connections. So that's why I mentioned about, you know, deep loving relationships amongst the devotees. Everybody wants a deep loving relationship. And if we don't have it, we will seek for it in a different way. That is the snag of the matter. And so for those who are or who have been following this tradition, these principles given by Prabhupada here, preliminary norms for leadership, character development, they are not a problem. But they are a big problem to the people out there. And even to some of our devotees. You go to some places and you ask about, you know, the regulatory principles of freedom. Some people, they are following one. Some people, they are following one and a half. Some people, they are following two. Some people are following two and a half. Some people are following three. Some people are following three and a half. Therefore, it is difficult for such people to become leaders. Our movement is very powerful. It's coming from the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya brought this movement from the spiritual world. But we have to have some taste. Then we'll give up the lower taste. I was mentioning the other day in the class that even Uddhava, he was mentioning that, you know, the whole culture of the pastimes of the Lord is for us to be able to relish. But that relishment comes through drinking that juice, the juice of Krishna consciousness, the juice of the holy name, through the ears. Karna piyu samasadhyā. This juice is not taken through the mouth. It's through the ears. And we have to drink it every day. And that will make us very strong. That will consolidate our nucleus. The material world is such a deadly, dangerous place. It's like an ocean full of sharks. And therefore, if even we have good intentions, we may not be able to make the progress that we want to make in our devotion. And so it is important for us to understand that this type of sangha helps us to build that strong, loving relationship with each other and to be able to help to cleanse our impurities. And so every one of us is responsible for the spread or for the dissemination of Krishna consciousness. Especially all of you, you're coming from scholarly backgrounds. And you should not think that, you know, the preaching is just meant for the temple president or the guru or Kalankanta. No, it's meant for all of us. All of us have to help. Lord Chaitanya said, spread the holy names in every town and village. So these principles, they're very simple. And anyone who's been in Krishna consciousness knows that these principles are simple. But they are not simple for someone who is not chanting Hare Krishna. If we're not chanting Hare Krishna, it is very difficult for us to even maintain these principles. Because we will not have the zeal, the purity required. And if we are not chanting even at the proper time, it's like, you know, taking a medication outside of the doctor's prescription. The doctor says, take this medicine 2 times in the morning before meal. Two tablets before meal. 2 tablets in the afternoon. 2 in the evening at bedtime. And sometimes some rascal patients, they just think I'm too busy. So I'll take the six tablets at bedtime. The doctor is not stupid. So, in a nutshell, there are best periods to do, to perform or to prosecute our sadhana, and we'll get maximum result. We do it some other time. They look very simple. They look very simple, but I keep emphasizing these things because as I travel around to different countries, I've seen that these fundamental basic principles are responsible for the stagnation of most of our devotees, devotional culture. I mean, it's like we mentioned in Raman Rarity, someone asked a question about, you know, chanting and, you know, at the same during Japa period and the people are discussing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I have a book. And I compare it to someone who is discussing with his loved one or her loved one. And say after a wedding, you've been looking for a spouse. And here you are, you got one. And you just wedded. After wedding, it's what? Honeymoon, is it? Honeymoon means at a time that, you know, it's just, the man is for you. All attention should be for you. Or the woman, all attention should be for you. So at that time, even people, they switch off their telephones. No external, you know, no external calls. That is even, you know, a human loving relationship. And we are trying to establish or reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna, our most lovable object. And this is our honeymoon. Japa period is our honeymoon. And we have time to do some other thing? Come on. Then you're not really serious about that marriage. Yeah, we're not serious about that marriage. So we don't want to take you too much into your precious daily activities. Maybe there are some comments or some questions on this point or any other point. Yes.
It's like breaking the regulated principles.
Yeah.
I was wondering, does that also go over to the illicit connection with women, that if we associate with the opposite sex and we're not just talking about devotional service, is that also considered illicit connection?
The idea of connecting with people is to eventually open up the way for them to become exposed to Krishna consciousness. So, for instance, you are in, for instance, you are in college, and you have classmates. We have male and female classmates. I mean, you don't necessarily have to begin to talk about Krishna the first time, you know, a girl classmate comes to you to speak to you about something that she needs some help from you. But you have to establish the relationship. You have to establish relations. Sometimes our devotees, they go really, you know, haywire in terms of, you know, he's a kami, she's a kami, get out of here. But it's not like that. We have to create, we have to be friendly with people. When we are friendly, when they come close, they will see our lifestyle, our qualities. And some of them will be forced to ask about our tradition. What are the things, what type of practice, I mean, things like that. So, the intention, you know, Krishna is looking at our intention, you know. We may have a connection with someone, but maybe our classmate. And the whole discussion is based on coursework and all this stuff. But the idea should be that the person comes close. We should be able to expose our qualities to the person, our lifestyle to the person, and introduce some philosophical concepts that will intrigue that person, that will stimulate that person to ask some questions that will benefit that person's spiritual evolution. So, if we are having some connection with someone, it's alright. But if it is geared towards gratification of the senses, that becomes illicit. Because, see, I can give you an example of myself. As I'm doing my doctoral research in applied management and decision sciences, specializing in leadership and organizational change, I encounter so many people that some of them, in the beginning, they don't know my background, that I'm a priest and all this stuff, okay? so they tend to relate to me like, you know, like every other person out there. But, you know, I don't just chase them away that, hey, come on, get out from me. You don't know I'm a sannyasi? Come on. I was giving an example the other day how, well, we were doing a course, and there were about 13 PhD students in that course. And then the professor, one Caucasian who was teaching us the course, you know, she became interested in me because I was, you know, excelling in the course. So when we went for our residency, and then, you know, she came to invite me for lunch. And, you know, but then there were two other of our course mates who were in that residency program. So I asked them, one of them was a retired a big military officer. The other guy is from Jamaica. So I asked them, Dr. Sassanso said, no, I should come for lunch. Can we go? They said, she didn't invite them. In America, if someone doesn't invite you, how can you go? Okay. So they said she didn't invite them. So apparently she just invited me. So, but then I could say, well, hey, doctor, so you don't know I'm a sannyasi? Inviting me for lunch? No way. But then I went because I was staying with Kanava Kanana and his wife. So I told them about the situation that, you know, they should pack my lunch for me because I'm going out for lunch with you know, one of my professors. So then I picked up my lunch bag, and then, you know, the day after our academic program, so she called some other three of her students that we are graduating, they are finishing their PhD that semester. So she wanted to introduce those students to me, and to introduce another professor who is a statistician to me. So, but then, you know, because she saw that, because we are doing a course on qualitative reasoning and analysis, some research project. So, because she saw that I was doing good, so she wanted to introduce me to other of her friends. So then I went, we all went, and then they ordered their food and all this stuff. They ordered their food. I brought up my lunch bag, and then they ended up. Also, all of them ended up, you know, eating something from my lunch bag because they said, "Oh, the guy is a vegetarian and all this type of cheese." So that's how I build up a relationship with the other professor and the other students. Okay, but then I didn't just start introducing Krishna consciousness to them. The professor, she knows that I'm a monk. Because in the beginning, when we had our introductions and all these things, you tell the other scholars about what your dissertation topic is, the motivations and all this. So I told them, you know, at our first meeting, that, look, I am a practitioner in this field. I'm a monk for the past, you know, number of years. I really want to delve into this area in terms of self-control and organizational leadership, because a lot of people are suffering from this type of predicament. They lose their positions and all these things. But I'm a practitioner. I really want to delve into this area because I want to share my experiences with other scholars and the world. So she knew that I was a priest, but other people didn't know. So, but then it built up a situation where I could have access to other people through the same professor. So connection doesn't necessarily mean in the beginning that, you know, we have to tell them Krishna's true Bhagavan Swaya. We have to create that connection first, and then other things will follow.
Thank you, Maharaj. I was really appreciating that, but also I was wondering, amongst people who already know that they're devotees, we know we're spirit soul and we're associating with each other, men and women, is it illicit connection if we are just whimsical and we talk unnecessary things instead of about Krishna consciousness?
Well, if we are devotees and we're talking prajapa, that is purely based on sense gratification. It's not what Prabhupada prescribes. We're coming together. In fact, male and female devotees, they're coming together for service. And the discussion should be based on, you know, how to elevate each other in Krishna consciousness. And we start to talk other stuff, then, you know, it becomes something that is outside of the circle, outside of the norm. Therefore, we have to be very much careful how we are interacting, because people are watching us, and especially people come for the first time and they have read our books and they see that, you know, this devotee is relating with this devotee in a based on, you know, the pull and the pushes of the senses. Immediately they will begin to think that, you know, we just pretenders. We say one thing and, you know, we don't really follow it. Yeah. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah. How do you say that our love of God is directly in relation to our love for his parts and parcels?
Yeah.
Or is it the other way around, that our love for the parts and parcels is related to our love for Krishna?
When you said love for the parts and parcels, what traditionally happens in the material world in the name of love, it's actually, in most cases, not. But it's the other side, you know, L-U-S-T. A boy can be attracted to a girl based on the pulls of the senses and the mind. But if we understand our predicaments and we rectify that, and we try to be able to motivate each other in a devotional culture, then yes, that is love. Because love is divine. And if we are really interested in someone, see, sometimes we talk about love, but, you know, we don't take even the first step. How would you say you love someone without even communicating? Is it possible that, you know, you say, I love you very much, but, you know, there's no communication? Even just Hare Krishna, good morning, is not there. So, the point is, yes, if we are loving someone, if I'm loving him, I am indirectly and directly loving Krishna. But we have to understand, what is the content of that relationship? What is the content of that love? In other words, our deep loving relationships is a reflection, or is directly proportional. The degree of our deep loving relationship is directly proportional to our loving intensity for love for Krishna. If we do not love the devotees around us, then it means that we are not really loving Krishna. We are not trying to love Krishna. Because in the Padma Purana, Lord Krishna mentions, those who say they are my devotees, they are not. Those who are devotees of my devotees, They are my actual devotees. They're my real devotees. So we can't say, you know, I love Krishna and we don't love the devotees. Therefore, we see that even Prabhupada, why did Prabhupada win so many souls, especially in the West? He loved them. And the, you know, his students, they could see that he loves us more than what we could experience with our parents. So they sacrifice everything else. Sometimes, I've seen situations, even in our movement, people have children and they don't really love the children. People are looking for a spouse for years. They got a spouse and they don't really love their spouse. Why? Why do I say this? Because they don't give these people, their children, their spouse, quality time. So how will you say you love someone and you just keep walking, you're generating millions of dollars every month, but you don't give quality time to your spouse? What type of love is that? You don't give quality time to your child. I was telling a story about some children, some research in India when we went for leadership conference. Even the kids, they are so intense about quality time. So how will you say you love your child when you don't give quality time? How will you say you love a devotee when you can't even give quality time to that devotee? When you can't communicate with the devotee? When you can't even call to find out, how are you doing? Is everything okay with you? How is your family? How is your studies going? Sometimes we call people because we need help from them. That's not love. We may say, well, you know, it's service to Krishna. But we have to understand what the content of this love is. Yes, so if we love our devotees, it means we are also loving Krishna. It has to be supporting emotional support for each other, not only service. Emotional support, that is also service. Emotional support for each other. For instance, if someone is passing through some challenges, we should be there to support the person. We should not only be there, be close to the person when the going is good. When it's going is tough, we should be available to support that person. That is love. That is how to convince someone that, come on, I love you. To tell someone I love you is not enough. You should be there to support the person in time of need. A friend in need is a friend indeed. A lover in need is a lover indeed. Okay? Yeah. Again, it boils down to service. We have to serve each other. But sometimes, you know, we tend to think that I'm a very good pujari, I serve Krishna very nicely, but, you know, the other devotees, I mean, you know. But that is kanista. Very dedicated to the deities, and you don't give a damn. You don't care about the devotees around you. That is kanista adhikari, the lowest level of loving devotion. So we should have that caring thinking, caring attitude for each other. Then we will have that energy to follow the Vedic principles. Because the devotees we love will be praying to Krishna. This devotee, he's helping me so much. Please, Krishna, help him. Without we knowing, so many people are praying for us. And imagine people are petitioning Krishna to help someone. Krishna comes to the rescue. Yeah, that's how it works. Yes.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. Often I think about how we have such deep philosophy in Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just some religion. It's a lot more than that.
Right.
But then I was also thinking, at the same time, we come from a tradition. And some things are very specific. Like, I was thinking especially about the way we go about clothing and feel that. Now, it's interesting because our movement is universal. The same type of tradition. So, like, how do we maintain this, like, being universal but at the same time not being narrow minded?
That basically has to do with diversity. in terms of our spiritual culture, there are a lot of things that we have to be able to adjust to suit the environmental situations. But the core things, the core principles, we cannot compromise. It's just like even Prabhupada, he would allow his devotees to go to the airport, you know, putting on, you know, disguised clothes, kami clothes or whatever, wigs, you know, just to be able to reach out to people to give out the message. So external things we may always adjust, but the core principles we can't compromise with that. And therefore, that is why it is not only a religious ideology, but it's a cultural principle. And therefore, it is important for us to be able to understand the essence of what we are doing. The essence is to be able to create a viable future for the society, and not just only for ourselves. And so if we are maladjusted, it could be very difficult to deal with that. If we are not able to adjust ourselves to suit situations, just to be able to, you know, bring people close to Krishna, then it becomes difficult. Otherwise, I mean, we could even be fanatical. So yes, even the dress is there and all these things, but for instance, you don't dress like this when you are going to class. Okay. So then you are adjusting according to the needs of the environment. So the important thing is our consciousness, for us to maintain a particular high consciousness in terms of what we want to achieve in our lives, how we want to do it, and how to go about doing that on a daily basis. So it is important for us to be able to maintain high sadhana for us to achieve that objective. Because if you have high consciousness, you could even be on swimming pants and be able to achieve your goal. Okay, but if you don't have that high consciousness, the environment impacts on the individual. Okay, and so you find yourself in a situation where, you know, your consciousness depletes very easily. And so it's very important. What you have in here is very important. You have this sangha practically every day, and it energizes you. It prepares you. It's food for the spirit. You go out with a lot of, you know, spiritual energy to be able to face the challenges of the day. So this is required.